I could.
Kerwin's okay, Funny Stories. It could be a new segment. Welcome to Kerwin's Funny Stories with your host, Kerwin.
That's literally the whole podcast.
I'd listen to that.
Welcome back to What's All That About, a podcast where two cheeky chaps chat candidly about stuff. My name is Kelso, one of the aforementioned cheeky chaps, and with me, as always, is my dear longtime mate, Betty and Veronica Superfan, and co-host Kerwin. G'day, Kerwin.
Welcome, Kelso. It's always a pleasure to hear your voice.
That's very kind of you to welcome me like that, but you have made me feel welcome again, so much so that I'd like to ask to jump in the car and pop down to the local Irish bar and have a couple of Irish whiskies.
Ooh, really? On the rocks or just straight up neat? Like a man?
I like it on the rocks with a dash of water. I should explain, dear listener, a dash of water is on the face.
I would like to have a camera trained on your date as you ask.
whoa. You want a camera trained on my date?
just for this bit, you know, not for all of it, obviously.
Because, dear listener, in Australia and perhaps the United Kingdom, a date does mean you're an arsehole. So a camera trained on my date as I have an Irish whiskey, I'm not sure that's something you can put on YouTube.
I'm not sure how we
could. Wouldn't last very long.
I'm not sure how we ended up down this dark alley, but
literally. All right, so you're poo-pooing the dash of water in Irish whiskey on the rocks?
Yeah, I was just going to say I'd love to have a camera, like a can-do camera, trained on your Tinder date as you order a. Can I get a Irish whiskey, thanks? And she'd probably look and go, ooh, what a man. And then go, yeah, can I get that on rocks with a dash of water? She goes, oh.
Yes, and I do need that water supplied in a small pipette. Because when I went to an Irish whiskey factory in Ireland, that's how they said it was best done. A small pipette.
Yeah, and they give you that. You're about to walk away from the bar with your date. And then you stop and go, oh, can I get a serviette as well?
Yeah, whisper it under your... Yeah. Serviette.
Well, it should have come.
I was in an Irish bar. I used to spend a lot of time in an Irish bar in Denver, Colorado, when I used to live there. And I was propping up the bar one night, sipping on an Irish whiskey, and a lady approached me, who I did not know, and asked what I was drinking. I described the contents that were in my glass, and she said, ooh, it makes you look sophisticated. And I said, thank you very much. I was just trying to get loaded and laid. Tell you, dear listener, one of those things came true that night.
Right.
The former, not the latter.
Oh, I was going the other way. That you got laid but didn't get drunk. That's where I was going.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Which actually, to be honest, if you pick up early, it's quite likely to happen.
Well, you know, I'm a glass half full kind of a guy. with a dash of water. Thanks.
Yeah, the reason I invited you to this Irish bar, the drunk Irishman, an Irish bar, is I heard just recently, this news is a little bit old, of course, but they opened the bars in Ireland on Good Friday for the first time in 70 years, I believe. I could be wrong, could be 40 or 35 years, but in a long time, Good Friday, bars open in Ireland. And that must have got messy.
And I can just see all the Irishmen. You know what? I think this year's going to be a really good Friday. That was my Irish accent. All right, 2 out of 10. That was terrible. It was awful.
That's grand. The thing is, no doubt most of those pubs were unfortunately crowded out by all the bloody tourists. And
right.
Probably the proper Irishman went, you know what? Give that a miss.
Yeah, I was just thinking that. Do Irish people in Ireland actually have to have secret pubs, like speakeasies, to get away from the tourists going, oh, so this is what it's really like?
Yeah, if I see one more fucker with a Guinness hat on, I'm out of here.
Yeah. Well, because you live in London, does London's Irish pubs do them justice, or are they like here where they're just a normal pub where all the fittings are wooden and you just get, basically an Irish pub in Australia, you just get a beer in a bigger glass. That's pretty much it.
Well, the ones I've gone to, I haven't gone to any like hole in the wall ones, which probably are much more realistic. But the ones I've been to are kind of like chain ones, I suppose. There's one called O'Neill's.
Yeah.
And really the only difference is that you can actually order Irish whiskey other than Jameson's.
Right.
That's the only difference.
Okay. Yeah, because the ones here are kind of like those themed American restaurants that you used to get, not so much these days, but they were very popular when we were teenagers. Remember that? Like every restaurant had like memorabilia from, you know, number plates from American cars and bullhorns and cowboy hats all over the walls of a Mexican restaurant or something like that. You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean.
Yeah. So... You know, actually, because I played a lot of these Irish pubs, and I was saying, they're not very Irishy. I actually don't really know any Irish music, but I used to get heaps of gigs in an Irish pub because most people that go there aren't expecting to hear Irish music. They're locals, you know.
What do they expect when they go there?
Well, they want the same old crap. They want Summer of 69 and Brown Eyed Girl. That's what they want, you know.
Not from you, you goose. I mean, if you go to an Irish pub in Australia, what do you expect? I suppose just like a free Guinness hat once a year?
Well, you want booths and a lot of wood. You don't want a lot of fittings made out of wood. That's what you want. And like I said, you want a beer in a big glass. That's the attraction, I think, for most Australians, is you can get a beer in a 750ml glass. You know, that's almost a litre.
Load me up.
Yeah. But occasionally you do get some Irish people, that Irish travellers that go, like maybe they just want to taste a home, I guess. I'm not sure why you travel all the way to Australia from Ireland and, you know, first stop, go to an Irish pub. That seems a bit weird. But you do get a lot, like, for a while there, I was getting a lot of girls coming up to me saying, can you play a Galway girl? And I'd go...
I said, I do not know the song Galway, and please do not call me a girl.
Yeah, well, I actually got into a bit of this is a very rude young lady from Ireland was starting to take umbrage with the fact that I didn't have any traditional Irish music in my set list. And she asked for Galway Girl, and I said, I don't know that one. She goes, you don't know Galway Girl? It's the biggest song in Ireland yet. You know, she went off at me. And she goes, why don't you play any Irish music? This is an Irish pub. And I said, well, because this is Australia. I'm going to alarm you. You're not at home. You're not in Kansas anymore, Dorothy.
Yes, we're merely playing lip service here.
Yeah. So, long story short, I ended up learning Galway Girl
that night.
Yeah. No, well, not that night, but like I thought, you know what? I get asked for it a lot. Someone will come, you know, Galway Girl. And I'm like, what is this song? You know, and I don't mean the recent Ed Sheeran song of the same name. It's another song. That's it's not traditional, I don't think. But anyway, it's a huge hit. It's like, in Ireland, the song that everyone flocks to the dance floor for, apparently. So she wanted she was having a party time. It was like midnight. She'd come in. She was really cut, you know. So she walks in. And she's like, I'm going to dance to Galway Girl. And she walks right up to me and demands it. And because I didn't know it, she, you know, gave me a mouthful. But it affected me. So I went and learnt it, you know. And since I've learnt it, not one single solitary person has asked for Galway Girl.
Are you getting to the stage where you're going to forget the song?
No, I play it a lot. I think I'm trying to prove a point to somebody. I don't know. But I actually, when I'm at an Irish pub, I'll pull it out. You know, I'll go, all right, here's the Galway Girl. Nothing. You know,
absolutely. All right, zero. So you're still playing it. It hasn't been requested.
I've got to be honest, I do like the song. It's actually quite a pretty cool song.
I've never heard it. Give us a blast if you can.
Oh, I thought you'd never ask. All right, here we go.
That's grand.
I hope we don't have any our dear listener is an Irish and is being completely offended by our horrible accent.
Well, actually, I think one of our alpha listeners or beta listeners, I can't remember what I refer to them now. I think Kieran might be in Ireland. And actually, shout out to Kieran. He's been loving a lot of our tweets, our episode tweets on Twitter. So tip of the cap. And as a special reward, Kieran, Kerwin will now play Galway Girl.
And I promise I'll try to keep my Irish accents to a minimum for the yeah. remainder of the podcast.
Kieran's clicking subscribe, unsubscribe. favorites, remove from favorites.
Yeah. Well, hopefully this will bring it back. I'm sorry, I'm padding out here while I find the lyrics to Galway Girl. Oops. Didn't take long. There we go. Okay, here we go. Put a bit of sting going. Where is it? Actually, just trying to create.
That's a quintessential glass being knocked over in an Irish bar in Australia. Doesn't happen in Ireland.
I'm just trying to put you in the room. You know, here we go. I took a stroll down the old long walk, the D-I-E-I-E. And I met a little girl and we stopped to talk on the grounds of D.I.A. And I asked you for rent, well, what's a fella to do? Cause her hair was black and her eyes were blue. And I knew right then that I'd be taking a whirl down the Salt Hill Prom with a Galway girl. Oh yeah. And then yeah, big fiddle solo there.
Yeah. On stage.
Yeah, I know. I think Jim Morrison got arrested for that, I'm pretty sure.
You just can't fiddle on stage. It doesn't matter how great the song is.
No. Well, you probably could these days. I'm not sure.
Well, I believe there's a show called Puppetry of the Penis based on fiddling.
Yeah, that's true. How do they get away with that? I guess it's because it's not erect. But after all that fiddling, wouldn't there be... Do you reckon they have to, like, take it in turns and, like, one person's on stage and the other one's in, like, an ice bath or something?
Oh, they jerk off 5 times before each performance.
Yeah, I've seen it. He did look a bit, like, red and a bit, you know, braised.
I imagine after an hour and a half show of puppetry of the penis, one's penis would look quite red.
Yeah. You'd have
lots of twisting and forcing and...
I wonder if you get your pinching? Penis. You have to get your penis insured if you're a professional penis puppeteer. You would, because it's like your tools for work. Quite literally, it's your tools. You know, you need it.
Oh, that's comedy.
What happens if you get in like a car accident? I'll never penis puppetry again. You know, it would be awful. Oh well, you know.
Anything else? Or if you get into a fight and normally. You get into a fight and you say, like, just don't punch me in the face, all right? You say, look, don't punch me in the penis. Although I think a penis could probably take a punch quite well. Not the testicles, though. The testicles don't want any part of that.
Yeah, the thing is, you know, in the interests of gender equality, I'm waiting for puppetry of the labia. I wonder when that's coming down the pipeline.
It's a much smaller show.
Oddly enough, I actually thought maybe I could... be in the puppetry of the penis troupe.
Right.
Because I had a couple of tricks. I did.
You've been practicing for some time.
And then one of the guys went on TV and he was talking about that, you know, they have a few guys that do it and, and they said, you know, some guys audition and they were sort of making fun of the audition process and that they say, one of the things you got to do is the hamburger, you know. Right. That's pretty much, you know, the stock move in puppetry of the penis you got to have.
Is that when you make your penis look like a citizen of the German town of Hamburg?
It kind of does, you know, a little bit. They're very pink, I believe, there. But no, it sort of has to resemble a cheeseburger or something, you know.
Oh, well, yeah, or a hamburger, I just say big as you said.
Yeah, just a regular hamburger. So I gave it a go, but it turns out I don't have enough bun. So...
Yeah. Too much lettuce.
They always put way too much lettuce.
Pickles.
Oh, everyone takes them off anyway.
I ask for no pickles.
Yeah, they should put them on top of the box, and you can put them in there if you want.
My particular puppetry of the penis trick is a Berliner.
A Berliner, yeah. Do tell.
Kind of looks like a donut.
As in, do not put that in there.
Please not. Do you think that the Puppetry the Penis traveling show has understudies?
But like up and comer. Oh, that's the wrong turn of phrase.
You get kicked off the tour.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Instant termination for up and coming. You can't do that. Yeah, there's probably young fresh faced guy that's just like, I've only been like penis puppeteering for a little bit, and every night he thinks he's going to get his chance. Like one of the main guys goes, "Oh man, one of my balls is real sore," and he's thinking, "Ooh, could this be it?" Yeah, do you reckon he'd do like a Tonya Harding and maybe like hire some people to take to his dick with like a baseball bat or something?
Yeah,
how unfortunate.
Now's my chance to shine.
Mum, Dad, get in the car. I'm on.
I'll leave tickets at the door.
And you said playing with myself would never amount to anything.
When I was very young, 6 or 7, I was a serial player with my penis, I'm afraid to say. And my mother was obviously trying to get me out of the habit. So she said to me once, "Oh, look, can I stop doing that? Or can I have a play?" And after that, I never did it ever again.
Oh, wow. That's shock and awe tactics. I like that.
Yeah, mainly the shock.
Yeah, I'm not going to try that. I don't think.
Play with my penis?
Oh, I just can imagine me saying that to whatever, if I had kids. Hey, stop doing it or give me a go.
Especially if you said it in a crowded supermarket, you could be on a list before you know it.
Yeah, definitely in that voice as well that I did it. I don't know why I put that voice on.
We were talking about signs and all that type of stuff they put up in restaurants. Very American kind of thing, although it does happen in some of the English pubs, but seems a little bit more manufactured.
Well, I heard, because I'm going to jump in there just to add to this, just to colour your story a little bit, that there is companies around the world whose job it is to put stuff like that in themed restaurants that source things. So it's an industry.
It'd have to be, because how could you find all those interesting things otherwise?
Yeah, imagine you and I decide to open an Irish pub, but we're not going to get it. We're not opening it until we think we've got enough memorabilia that we have sourced ourselves.
We're going to have to visit a lot of antique shops in Galway.
Yeah, because we're under the misapprehension that that's how they do it. Kerwin and Kel. That does sound a bit like an Irish pub. Kerwin and Kel, so come on in. Come in for a cold in the yarn,
But when I first went to the States, I was in New Jersey, and I went to a TGI or an Applebee's. Actually, I think it was an Applebee's, something like that, and found myself a corner booth, settled into it, and the wall was chock-a-block full of oldie signs and all that sort of stuff. And the corner I had actually sat in had all, about 20 to 30 different old Coca-Cola advertising signs, on metal signs and all that sort of business. I was surrounded by Coca-Cola. And the waitress came over and asked my order, which I duly gave, double cheeseburger, fries, hold the pickles.
The usual, yeah.
And then I said, "And I'll have a Coke as well." And she said, "Is Pepsi fine?"
She basically ruined your day. Fair enough.
Yeah, I remember looking around the Coke sign thinking, I guess Pepsi is fine. I was kind of thinking about Coke. When I first started to enjoy Irish whiskey, it was introduced to me. Now, follow this carefully. Mm-hmm. Irish whiskey was suggested and introduced to me by my Mexican-American friend at a bar in Denver, Colorado.
Wow.
So we've shot around the globe there, haven't we?
Wow, what a melting pot this global village is.
An Australian turns up in America to be introduced to Irish whiskey by a Mexican, not immigrant, second-generation Mexican-American.
Well, guess who introduced me to Irish whiskey?
Was it me?
It was you. Good, fantastic. Away. Yes, it was you. We used to drink what we called scotch, which is yellow ethanol, basically.
It was the cheapest of the cheap blended scotch whiskey.
Because the other drinks that all the other blokes drank were like rum or in one brand in particular.
Oh, bourbon. No, Bundaberg. Bourbon, it was the...
Well, you had your Bundaberg rum, which is the Australian rum that everyone drinks, and it smells like a teenage hangover. That's what it smells like. And bourbon...
Is that a song?
Teenage hangover? I think maybe we should pause the podcast and maybe jot some lyrics down. I think I feel something. I'm feeling it. Sorry, where were we? I'm completely thrown there.
Bundaberg rum and...
Oh, well, yeah, because there was Bundaberg rum. Yeah, Bundaberg rum stank. And bourbon, yeah, which is the... universally, Beam and... what was the other one? Jack Daniels. That's what everyone drank. And we were like, I think I'm right in saying that we were a bit sort of, ugh, you know, we don't want to do that. So we thought we'd drink the cheapest possible Scotch whiskey that we could find, you know, that was available. Vat 69, I think, was one of our...
Oh, yeah, Vat 69.
There was a...
Captain Morgan?
No, that's rum. That's rum. It was, but you're right, it was something like that. It was something like that. It had a...
They were very generic names.
Yeah, and it was awful. But so that's why we used to mix it with ginger ale.
Mm-hmm.
So our drink, that, you know, this is why people thought we were either brothers or lovers. Because we'd go everywhere together and we'd order the same drink. So
yeah. Scotch and dry.
Scotch and dry, thanks. Yeah, two Scotch and dries.
Yeah. Now, I came a cropper when I moved to the States and I was drinking Scotch and dries to start with. I'd go to the bar and order from the American barman a Scotch and dry. And half the time they knew what I was talking about. The other half, I had to explain it was, you know, Scotch whiskey with a dry ginger ale filler.
Right.
What's the word? Mixer?
Mixer, yeah.
And then eventually one brave or cantankerous American bartender said, you know, just call it a fucking Scotch and ginger. That's what we call it. I went, oh, right, I will. That's going to avoid a lot of confusion.
Scotch and ginger, okay. All right, that's good to know. Yeah. Well, when you think about it, Scotch and dry, that does sound
exactly
a little bit like code for something. I don't know what. But so anyway, just to sort of paint a picture here, like went to, you know, so we grew up having no knowledge of whiskey at all. It was basically, you know, petrol mixed with ginger ale. We couldn't admit, because we know that people drink this stuff straight. You see it in the movies, you know. You see these guys in suits, and they get a really, they have a really nice glass, and they pour hardly anything into it. I'm like, well, why don't you just, you know, take a sip out of the bottle then? Anyway, but I didn't know anything. So you see guys having this sip, you know, and they go, oh, okay, so people drink it like that. So every time I tried to have a little sip of Vat 69, I was like, oh, how do people do this? It's awful. It's like my eyebrows are singed, you know.
Well, if that's the case, then, Kerwin, explain a certain day in 1994 when I came across a particularly good deal at the local bottle shop where I bought like a 1.5 litre of Scotch blended whiskey and then made a mistake of leaving it at your house. And then the next Wednesday morning, I turned up at 10:45 in the morning to walk in. You didn't lock the door, to walk in to find you sitting in your underwear, sipping from the bottle of my 1.5 litre whiskey. Explain that.
Oh, there were some dark days back at that apartment. I remember actually, I do remember that.
This was pre-Netflix.
Yeah, I hadn't quite seen it. I lived by myself, because me and a friend, we lived together, and then he moved to another town, so I decided to stay there by myself for a little while. And there was a real moment, because I was a musician. I was about, 18 or 19?
Very young.
And I remember thinking, all my heroes had this sort of bohemian kind of a thing, you know, like this risk-taking behavior. And I thought, yeah, I wouldn't mind getting in on that, you know. So there was a time there when I was living at that sort of, around about that time, when, I was smoking cigarettes and drinking alcohol straight out of the bottle. But what I probably didn't tell you was that I was vomiting up black stuff the next day. So,
oh, dear. Yeah,
that's the side of rock and roll you don't hear. I mean, you always hear about Keith Moon trashing a hotel room, but did you hear about his two-day hangover? We're like, don't talk to me. Turn out the lights.
Well, that's why you're the editor of the podcast, because you're great at editing these stories down.
Yeah, especially that last one.
Now, you're talking about being a bohemian and taking a lot of risk-taking.
Mm.
That brings us back to puppetry of the penis understudy. He did a lot of risk taking. No, risk taking. Oh.
Risk taking. I got it, though. I got
close to the punchline.
Yeah. We'll mulligan it. Is that a mulligan punchline?
I think we need to workshop it.
Yeah. All right.
One thing, I'm still a big fan of Irish whiskey. It's probably my preferred drop. But I came to the realization, which took a while, but I came to the realization that I actually prefer blended whiskies to single malt. Now, in the world of whiskey appreciation, that is a big no-no.
Right.
So basically, your single malt whiskey is like your haute couture. Did I say that right? Haute couture? You need to wear? No, the reverse. It's the, the elite, your single malt. If you're a connoisseur of whiskey, you're supposed to love the single malt. And the blended whiskey is kind of like the Kmart or the Walmart, if you will.
Yeah, oh yeah, I knew that. So, well, the thing is...
But after a lot of experimentation, and I will stress a lot of experimentation, it's all about blended whiskey for me. And I feel quite the pariah, but I've got to the age where I went, you know what, fuck it, that's what I like. Serve me up a Tullamore Dew.
Yeah, well, that's right. Well, that was that expertise that I got treated to the very first time that I went on my whiskey journey. Because the Scotch and dry days don't count. Let's be honest. Yeah.
Well, the only reason we were drinking Scotch and dry is because we found that alcohol the least abhorrent to swallow.
Right. Yeah. Now I know you've got an excellent memory, but I'm going to walk down memory lane.
Hold my hand
with you. I know you'll be pointing at everything that you've seen it all before. Yeah. That's what someone with a really good memory does down memory lane, is go, this again. Can we go in another lane?
Not that lane.
So I was actually playing a 2-week stint on a tropical island, and in between I had like 2 days off, and on the main mainland off that island was actually a bit of a party town, you might remember, a bit of a backpackers traveler's town.
I do remember.
Yeah, so we decided in my 2 days off that we would meet there, and you would hire out a room, and we would hang out and all sorts of stuff. So I got off the ferry and found where you were staying, which is from what memory right near the ferry. I think you got this great little spot.
Yeah, well, it wasn't a big town, so
yeah, that's true. Yeah, it was kind of like the town that Goonies is set in. If you're but like lots of fun. I mean, not that Goonies pirates. Wasn't fun. Yeah, yeah. I mean, Goonies was heaps of fun, but it was like fun for grown-ups. And then you produced this bottle. I think it was Jameson's. And you just put down two glasses of ice, and because we're at the out on the balcony, and that was the first time I ever had like I wouldn't say Jameson's is top shelf, but it was like of a quality that you could drink without mixing it with something. And oh boy, did we get drunk that night!
Well, I believe that's why I like Irish whiskey compared to Scotch whiskey, and we're talking blends again because the single malts of either country I can't stand, but. I like the Irish whiskey, and I think you took to it that night, is because Irish whiskey is sippable. It's actually not abhorrent to the senses, whereas Scotch whiskey tastes like it's been drained through a pig's arsehole.
And we finally felt, well, I did it, at least anyway, I felt that night like one of those like Humphrey Bogart kind of characters from the movies that swill like alcohol, like straight. I'm like, finally, I'm a man, yes!
I made it. I bought down a couple of smoking jackets. It was great fun.
Yeah, it was definitely like probably the biggest moment for me man-wise since, I don't know, when I got my first pubes, something like that, you know.
Who could forget that day?
Oh, man. I think I was the younger than everyone else. I think I was the last person to go pubic. In my
to pube up.
A pube up. Yeah, I went on in grade 7, so this is the last year of primary school for our international dear listener that doesn't know where that is. I don't know. You just have to go with it. So,
just say after 7 years of schooling.
Yeah, after a little school. So then the next one was all the kids that could grow a little, grow a beard or something. Anyway, so we're on this this end of grade 7 camp called Outward Bound. Everyone went on it. Even if you didn't go to my school, Kelso, which you didn't, Right. You probably went on one of those things, or at least it was happening.
I did.
You may not have, yeah. So it was actually for, you know, grade 7. I was 11, and most of the kids would have been 12. So it was like some kind of army, you know.
Yeah, it was 7 days in the wilderness with just what you had on your back. It was hardcore.
Turns out it was some kind of, like, personality test. Like, the teachers were, like, noting... And they would put you in stressful situations and stuff like that.
And it's going on your permanent record.
Exactly, yeah. And it sort of sees who, like, you know, actually tests some personalities. And they've stopped doing it now because it was a little bit Lord of the Flies-y. But, yeah.
Except with girls.
So, we're on this camp, and there was this guy called Dylan. And he was from South Africa, you know, and their schooling was obviously a bit different. So he was 13, you know, he was like a year older. And, you know, there was a truth or dare game going on. And I guess maybe he took a dare or decided to, you know, drop trout.
Big mistake.
And, wow, it was like one of the Jackson 5. I've never seen anything like it before in my life.
The Jackson 5 with the long nose.
Yeah, because I heard about pubic hair, you know, because this is you couldn't get a hold of pornography back then, you know. I still wasn't sure what a vagina truly looked like, you know, at that stage.
He had a vagina?
Well, but you know what I mean? You know, I was like, I knew what a penis looked like. I had one, you know. But, you know, as far as vaginas, it's still a bit of a mystery to me, you know. And I thought that some of that downy hair on my my pubis was starting to go a little bit darker. And I thought, yes, this is it. I've got pubic hair now. Yeah. And then on this this camp, Dylan, you know, flops out his dick. And I'm like, oh, my God. I'd never seen anything like it. It looked like, you know, it looked like one of those Italian kind of hairdos from the 70s, you know, like an afro, but it's real greasy, you know.
Well, he had been in the bush for 6 days.
Yeah, it was super gross, you know, and believe me, like, no one was impressed, so, you know, it was like, oh.
I feel sorry for Dylan.
Yeah, because, like, I had a look at my face. It was like, mine doesn't look like that. And every girl that was sitting around the campfire basically went, oh, no. Oh my God, seriously?
Well, it prevented a few teenage pregnancies, let's put it that way.
Yeah, that's probably all those girls are like, I knew it was going to be weird. I don't think it was going to be that weird. I was like, hey, don't base it all on Dylan and his weird-shaped dick, you know.
I feel sorry for Dylan. He totally should have taken truth.
He probably did. You know,
that's the trick with truth or dare. You can always lie to a truth, but when it comes to the dare, there's not much choice.
Actually, I had a moment. Actually, this memory came out of absolutely nowhere. So I'm
the that truth, is the podcast.
The truth or dare game is happening, and you know, because I was a little bit younger, I just sort of stayed back from things like this. You know, especially once Dylan's cock made an appearance.
And so, his bush was the problem.
It kind of had me shying away from the whole thing, to be honest. but anyway, so
one in the hands worked in the bush.
You get drawn in, and suddenly I was on the outer fringes of this truth or dare game. Next thing I know, I'm sitting next to someone, and I'm petrified. I'm absolutely, you know. And then it comes up, and I get a dare, and my dare is to kiss. Her name is Nicole. I shouldn't say her last name because it's real. She's probably the only person with that last name. And her name is Nicole. And she was actually kind of cute. And that was the dare. And everyone's like, oh, no, we shouldn't. And I'm like, well, I mean, if you want to. I mean, good. And then when there was this sort of like this moment where like, we're about to do it anyway, the teacher comes in. One of the teachers comes over and he goes, hey, guys, look, I know you're having fun, but we're going to have to keep it down. And and then he goes,
and we've heard about Dylan's bush.
Yeah, exactly.
It's all over.
Yeah. So he was sort of going, hey, yeah, no, it's all in good fun, guys. But, you know, let's wrap it up. And then he goes, and then he's about to walk away. He goes, and one more thing, go for it, Kerwin.
Get in there, son.
Get in, fill your boots. Yeah. Yeah. And I remember thinking, yeah, this totally makes up for seeing Dylan's cock. Yeah.
Right, so if I wanted to show you my cock, all I have to do is arrange a good-looking girl to kiss you straight afterwards.
That would help. That would help.
That sounds like a couple of threesomes I've had.
sounds more your extreme of mate. Gonna need a breather after that one.
Sorry, I think I confused that with a when I was being understudy for puppetry of the penis.
Right. Hey, look, now, you're just a kid with a dream. I get it, you know.
And my dream is to bend my penis into the shape of a Berlin donut. Now, when our school went on Outward Bound, which is the in the bush camping trip we were just talking about when we were 12 or 13, our school was split to two because there was not enough for two groups, but anyway, it was split into two, right? So okay. I went to one group, and the other kids went to the other group, right? Now, apparently, because we ran into them once or twice and spent one night together, but we didn't see them for most of the camping group, they had a female leader instructor. Because a couple of teachers went along, but then there was also a specialist bush survival expert.
And she was a female? Leader.
And she was a female.
Now, can I ask you, because I'm pretty sure that this might have been the same woman. Was she kind of like, she had short hair?
Maybe.
And she was like kind of fit and a little bit European looking? Because it had to be her.
Maybe. Was her name Kim or something like that?
Something like that. Oh, my God. I've got a Kim story too.
Okay, well, let me tell you my story.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
wow.
When we met up with the other half of the school group, after 6 days, they told us all of these preposterous stories, which you may be able to confirm now, that their leader was this, you know, okay-looking European short-haired, perhaps a lady called Kim.
Yeah.
And they were telling us all these crazy stories of how they'd, like, seen her naked, like, yes! 5 or 6 times.
That's true! It's true! That's what my story was! That she was a real, you know, we was using that word, bohemian. Yeah,
she was bohemian.
Yeah, that's
hanging around, sipping from a 1.5 liter whiskey bottle.
Yeah, so this episode will be bohemians and something. So, yeah, we're really exploring bohemians. Yeah, so Kim, let's just say her name was Kim. Yeah, she was very sort of, let's say, very European in her...
avant-garde, ahead of her time.
Well, she was very sort of European in the sense when it came to nudity. And right. She didn't mind, you know, if you just need to freshen up by the creek, because this thing was out in the, you know, it was out there, you know, it was out in the Badlands, you know. She would like, you know, I didn't actually hear the tits out story. I wasn't present, but I heard a whole bunch of guys, oh my God, she was just down the thing. She just took a top off and just washed the tits. Oh my God. You know, and I was like, what? You know,
yeah, because when you're 12 or 13, this is a major fucking happening.
Yeah, seeing tits? I mean, what? You know, there was, you know, stop everything.
That wasn't the El Dorado.
Yeah, I know, and I missed it. So, but anyway, because this thing went for 7 nights. This is a marathon. You might remember. It was quite...
I got homesick, pal.
Yeah, it was. The thing is, okay, so on, like, I think the third or fourth night, in a around the campfire, I was horsing around, and I was an asthmatic as a kid, right? You know? And so, in an effort to impress my classmates, I rolled up a cornflakes box and smoked it.
And as we all know, that's a surefire way to impress your friends.
Well, what,
if you'd rolled up a Cocoa Pops box and smoked it, I'd say cool, but cornflakes, hardcore.
Well, if by impressing my friends you mean getting a huge asthma attack and having to be basically, they had to sort of, put together a sort of a makeshift hospital for me. Because they realized I couldn't be like chop it out or anything like that, but I was like, oh, I'll be fine. And so anyway, and I was thinking, oh, this is the worst thing ever. This is so humiliating. I can't believe my parents are going to be so mad. Bum, bum, bum. So basically, Kim became my carer.
And your nurse.
For a day. But okay, so this is one of these moments as a kid you just, like, you never forget, right? So I woke up the next morning after this whole thing, and it must have been like five, it was like first light, you know, sparrow's fart, basically, you know.
That's early.
Yeah, pretty early. And I open my eyes, and Kim is, you know, I don't know, she's sort of you know, the people like that, the early risers, you know what I mean? And she was doing something, like rubbing it around her pack. She was squatting down on the ground and looking for something. And I look up, and I know she's not wearing underpants. So I got a full, unobstructed view, and I finally saw my first vagina. Yeah.
This is bullshit. Pan down. I want bush.
I know, right? So you can imagine, like, that horrible image of Dylan's cock was just so... It was just erased immediately. So, yeah, it was. But I remember thinking that normally it was the kind of thing that I'd go, oh my God, so embarrassed, I'd look away. But I remember just thinking, you know, I'm going to settle in. I'm going to settle in and just see where this goes.
She turns around, you've got a thing of popcorn popped up on a pillow. What?
Let's just say,
Netflix and chill, baby. It will be a thing one day.
Yeah, let's just say that after I saw Kim squatting down, looking for something in her backpack, I was not able to make the hamburger.
But you could do a very good churros.
Yeah, decent churro, totally. She was snatch out, you know. First thing in the morning, which I kind of get, you know. They say the early bird gets the worm.
You certainly did that morning. That's amazing, Kerwin, because I thought for all those years, those other kids in my school on that camp were blowing smoke up my ass about this Kim, the European tour leader.
So but, was she cool?
She was
Kim?
A bush expert.
Yeah, I was going to say.
More ways than one, apparently.
I was going to call her Kim the Jungle Warrior, but yeah, no, that's way better.
Yeah.
Bush Queen.
Do you think she actually blew smoke up anyone's ass?
Probably.
Or was that too European?
I think if she did it to me, I probably would have got another asthma attack, probably.
Yeah. And she would have got another strike on her record. The government would have said, right, back to Belgium with you. That's, you know, we can have a few through, but smoke up the ass. Oof.
I know, right? Well, but those cams got pretty primal, don't you reckon? I mean, I remember the my youngest brother who was about, I think it's, six.
I'm sorry, did you just say those cans got pretty primal?
No, those camps, those school camps. Those,
Right. Because okay. I thought we were still talking about her breasts.
Because my father worked for, you know, the education department. I found out that those camps were some kind of, like, they were supposed to put you through stress and see who does what. The whole thing was like a big test. And they stopped doing it because it was seen as too, as I said earlier, Lord of the Flies.
Yeah.
I
got really, really, really homesick.
Right. Because it wasn't, remember when you'd go on school trips and camping things, there'd be like dormitories and, you know, places to actually stay, you know?
Yeah, and it'd be like one night away or two nights max.
Yeah, and if it wasn't, it was a tent, and it was usually a pretty decent tent, you know, and, you know, all cool. This thing, remember this, you were given a backpack and everything that you needed had to fit in there. So we're talking, like, you know, for me, I was an 11-year-old kid carting around a full-on army-style backpack, and everyone had to have it. And and you didn't get a tent, as you might recall. You were given a sheet of plastic and some string.
A
bivouac, yeah. Yeah, so that was it. So that was part of the challenge, was to find a way to... it was a plastic, a clear plastic sheet, and you had to find a way to make shelter out of it. So it was like asking a lot of little kids, you know what I mean? Can you imagine them doing that to kids these days? That would make the most awesome TV show ever, but wouldn't it? Wouldn't it be
slightly cruel.
Yeah, well, but I mean, that's, you know, when you see like TV shows or movies about the future and all those game shows a little bit like, wow, that's what the world's come to. Yeah, hopefully
the Running Man.
Yeah, something like, let's hope we get you know, Outward Bound. That's what you call it. That's what they were called, Outward Bound. Even the name of it sort of sounds a little bit Machiavellian. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because there was no suggestion you were going to come back.
Yeah,
it was outward.
Yeah,
you're gone,
and you were bound by that. You couldn't escape. You know, you weren't. You could though. We did have a few Gomer piles in our. in our group. There was one in particular, Nathaniel. You might remember that guy. He ended up going to our high school. He had a total freak out and refused to carry his pack. So me and another guy, Nathan, had to carry this guy's pack, like hand in hand, like, you know what I mean? Like sort of one hand each, while this sort of losers are like, why am I here? It was like, really, there were meltdowns everywhere. It was incredible. And the great thing was, I'm witnessing this going, I can't, this is so good. I'm loving this. And I remember thinking, they're not going to get me. I mean, I am, you know, I'm made of stronger stuff. Now, give me that cornflakes box.
Line it up, baby.
Now, I was like,
if we make this into a TV show, will there be an After Dark component where Julio gets his dick out and Kim gets the tits out?
Julio.
Julio, what was his name?
Dylan.
Dylan.
You've forgotten Dylan already, man. Unfortunately, I get that you forgot it, but Dylan is tattooed on my brain. I couldn't pick him out in a lineup unless he got his dick out.
I assume he hasn't shaved his pubes.
No, you know what? He's the kind of guy that would. You know how like guys sometimes shave their pubes? He's a total pube shaver, for sure, that guy. You know?
I'm a pube shaver.
Haven't seen him in like 30 years, but he's a pube shaver. Yeah. You're a pube shaver?
I'm a pube trimmer.
Oh, you got to be. You know what I mean? Yeah, you got to.
Yeah, you don't want to tickle some girl's nose.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes when I'm naked and I'm lying down, I look down at my dick. If I don't
and you
trim,
can't see it.
It kind of looks a little bit like Albert Einstein.
You mean ready to solve the issues of the universe? Is it staring at the face of God?
Something like that. I don't know. I never read the book.
There was one section at the Outward Bound on the day five when they said, right, we're going to hike over this mountain now and it's going to take us a day and a half. And because we're hiking over the mountain, there'll be no rivers or streams. So there's nowhere to fill up your water bottles. So everyone spend 20 minutes, fill up all your water bottles and have a really big drink because for the next day and a half, water's going to be scarce.
Right,
I've never been so scared in all my life. I was like, what
I know. Don't you reckon it's so like unbelievable they put kids through this, you know? I mean, the only thing that's missing is that kids should be voted off. You know what I mean? The first gone is Nathaniel with his backpack. He's gone. Fuck that guy.
He's
off.
Gone.
Yeah, he's
fuck
first
him.
First cab off the rank, that guy.
Yeah.
You know, he's the first guy. You know the horror movie where there's a guy that gets killed before the titles? That's Nathaniel, you know.
Oh, wow.
Before the titles, you know, straight up. So,
there was a girl on the other camp who pissed herself, I'm afraid, when she was sleeping one night. And for the rest of the tour, she smelled like piss.
Wow. Okay. Well, can
rather
I...
Rather unfortunate.
You know I'm not in the one-upping game, Kelso, but...
oh, no.
Yeah.
Don't tell me where this is going.
Well, you just sit back and relax. Because there was a guy, and he was a really nice guy, actually. He was sort of quiet, unassuming sort of a guy. His name's Brett, you know. And he was the kind of guy that always pitch in and never, you know, he wasn't really a grandstander, you know.
He was a real Brett.
But he wasn't particularly... bright, you know, he was just simple sort of a guy. Anyway,
he's not bright.
But yeah, he was just one of those guys who just went, okay, he's fine, you know, you don't have to worry about that guy, you know. But on day three or four, he shat himself because, you know what I mean? Because we're, you know, the thing about camping, I think every second camping experience I've been on, there's some toilet problem. Because you're, right. You know, you were so used to, you know, pipes and all that. You know, we're not having, yeah, exactly. So when you're basically given a sheet of plastic for a house, you know, what's the toilet?
And a
now?
Hole in the ground for a toilet.
Yeah. So obviously, a lot of 12-year-old kids was like, what, you know, so poor old Brett shat himself. But turns out he didn't have a spare pair of jeans.
Right.
So him and Kim tried to beat them clean against a rock, which, you know, which was largely successful. save for a fawn brown shaped smear right in the sort of crack of the jeans, you know what I mean? So they did wash it out. It no longer smelled, but he spent the rest of the second half of the camp with a, yeah, with a, and his nickname was Brown Spot. Yeah, poor guy. And the thing is, it wasn't just, I don't know, it was me and my friends. It wasn't just Brown Spot. You had to say it like this. You had to go, Brown Spot.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I know.
Were you a bully? Is that what you're telling me?
No. No. I mean, they came up with a name. I just put the inflection on. Okay.
You really workshopped it.
Yeah, I just was adding some spice. You know, come on. That's, hey, if you bring me in, that's what you're going to get. You know what I mean?
It's improv, baby.
Yeah. Well, this is the other thing, right? Well, in the requirements of Outward Bound, they had this list of things you must bring. I don't know if you remember this, Kelso. And one of the things, and it was written in all caps or maybe bold type or something like that, it said you must bring a woolen jumper. Do you remember that one?
A sweater.
No, it had, well, yeah, a sweater for those who don't live where I live. Yeah, you had to bring a woolen sweater, you know, and... I didn't have a woolen sweater. We lived in the tropics, you know. Who had a woolen sweater, you know?
Nobody.
I'll just go to my woolen sweater drawer and pick out the one I like the most. So I asked around my family. No one had a woolen sweater, you know. And I thought, you know, Dad has this really nice, like, green jumper that's really warm. That'd be nice. It was just like a regular, you know what, like, sweaters are made out of. You know what I mean? Sweatshirts, that kind of stuff, whatever that is. It was, but it was big and it was soft and new, so it felt really warm to me. So I thought, cool. Woolen sweater, check, you know. But what I didn't know was that apparently the woolen sweater was, they should have probably mentioned this, you know, why it had to be wool, is because we would go down rapids, you know, so this is the other thing, putting 12-year-old kids on a, like a blow-up mattress and send them down like rapids down a mountain. This
oh, that's right. So whitewater rafting, essentially, on an inflatable mattress.
Yeah, basically, yeah. Another thing, just to see who freaks out this time, you know. And guess who it was this time? Well, it was me, but it was like by accident, kind of. Because when I read in the list, woolen jumper, I thought it just meant the warmest thing you could find. You know, that's what I thought, you know. I didn't realize that it was because it was wool, because on these rapids, it's ice cold. We didn't go up. We went in the middle of winter. This is the other thing. They didn't, like, take us in summer. It was a real slog, you know. So it was cold. So the water in this fast running, you know, river was freezing cold. And I didn't realize that wool, whether wet or dry, keeps you warm. Did you know that?
Well, that's why sheep wear it.
Yeah, but did they go down a lilo down the rapids? No. I mean,
none they can avoid it.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing is, if they did, it probably wouldn't bother them.
Sheep are famously reluctant to whitewater raft.
Although, you know when sheep get wet, it'd be weird. You know when, I'm assuming, like, when sheep get out of the pool, like, they all laugh at each other. Man, you look so different.
Don't look at me.
No, I'm hideous. Yeah, so I didn't have a woolen jumper, so this water that would have been like, I don't know, 5 degrees Celsius, so I don't know what that is Fahrenheit, but it's cold, you know. And here, this green, you know, jumper that's oversized because it's my dad's, you know, and now it's getting wet, you know.
Right.
So I'm basically wearing this wet, I'm a wet blanket, you know, I'm a giant wet blanket, and it's not keeping me warm because I don't have wool. So I go into, like, almost, you know, borderline hypothermia. So, unfortunately, Kim wasn't around this time to warn me. But, I kind of got caught out. But this is another one of those things. So they probably would have, like, got out the old clipboard and went, oh, Kerwin. Oh, boy. You know, I hate to do this, Kerwin. But the cornflakes box now, this is... You know, I thought you were going to be one of the strong ones.
That's permanent record, mark it down.
I know.
That does remind me of a scene on the Goodies once where the Goodies go to the North Pole and they meet a arch evil nemesis, kind of like a Blofeld character who's trying to take over the world, and the goodies have gone there to thwart his plan, and the goodies are freezing, even though they're wearing like these huge, big winter coats, as you can imagine explorers would wear, and they're freezing, and the Blofeld character greets them, and in a very James Bond villain effect, he, you know, is very kind and cordial to them, and he has got a, inside his igloo, he's got a henchwoman, or a beautiful henchwoman, who's wearing only bikini, and he noticed that the goodies are freezing even though they've got these big coats on, so he says to his henchwoman, give them your clothes. So the woman goes to take her bikini off, and immediately at the thought of that beautiful woman taking her bikini off, the goodies warm up. I go, no, we're fine now.
It's classic comedy.
I wonder how many dear listeners have seen or heard of the goodies.
Well, not many, I guess, if any. But, you know what, I was actually thinking in a similar thing. I wonder how many dear listener, and maybe you could tweet us at podcast KAK, or send us a little email at Kilsa, help me out here. It's
podcastkak@gmail.com.
Absolutely, yeah. So I was wondering if any dear listener, when the part of the world they grew up in, had to go through some kind of endurance camp like we did, or maybe that was a purely Australian thing. I would have thought a country like, well, do we have any listeners in in Scotland?
Yeah, it seems like something that happened in Scotland or Canada. They've got big, great outdoors.
Yeah, take them out there and see who, you know, stands up, who's strong and who's weak, you know. Is that something that we must have thought was a good idea to do in a state-run school? Yeah. but the thing is, I look back on it so fondly. I mean, every time I see Brown Spot, I think
the guy's so and much... think of the sixth member of the Jackson Five.
Yeah, I mean, so much happened on that camp. So many things. I kissed probably my first, you know, pretty decent-looking girl. I saw my first dick.
Oh, you skimmed over that.
Well, the kiss, you know, as in go for it, Kerwin.
Oh, no, okay, so you actually did kiss her. I thought teacher broke it up.
He didn't break up the party. It was just getting a little out of control. I mean, I think they realized that, I mean, I guess when you look at it, teachers are thinking, man, these poor kids, man, if they want to, you know, if that kid from...
they want to huddle together for warmth.
Yeah, and if that weirdo from South Africa wants to flop his cock out, let him, you know, go for it. You know, whatever. It's been a hard day, you know. People literally
were shitting.
Well,
that was always the best thing about school camps, wasn't it? Is that there was always a little bit of room for rompy pompy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I remember getting so much action on high school camps. It was just outrageous.
How much action?
Oh, heaps. Heaps.
Whoa.
Yeah. It was ridiculous. I remember, I'm not sure if you remember this, but I went on a, it was called IYP. It was called Inter-Year Project. And it basically
That already sounds like a
It does sound a bit. Yeah, like anything that starts with the word inter. You know? Inter. Yeah, right. So, yeah. So I was really... into this anyway. So it was a grade 11, so it's the penultimate year of your schooling.
Yeah, junior year in the States.
Junior year, yeah. So and what we would do, they would select a few people from that year to be mentors or sort of people that, you know, you could, you know, just introduce to the freshmen, is that the right, you know, the first years.
Yep.
So that was what it was. So me and a girl who I, as you might recall, Kelso, spent much of my high schooling being her boyfriend, or, you know, we were fighting.
Or bitch.
Yeah, it was all this, yeah, basically. Yeah, so this IYP camp, for some reason, we were both selected to go on this camp. And the camp that you go on when you're in the first year of high school? Whatever that is, that's what, you know, yep. So we were like the older students that were basically, and it was just me and her. We were I don't know, what do you call them? Camp liaison people, whatever.
Oh, you're almost like camp directors in those American camp movies. Yeah. So you were the two older kids.
Yeah.
So what, they bummed you together?
Well, we weren't given a whistle or anything like that, but we were given, you know, you might remember from these sort of camps, you might even remember it was Crystal Creek, you know, the Crystal Creek campgrounds, you know it was so well, you know.
I do.
So you know how often when our schools would do a thing there, they would put the girls on one side and the guys on the other, you know, it was very segregated. Well, there was the teachers' one. So we were in the teacher's one. So we had adjoining rooms, which is outrageous when you think about it, you know.
Someone did not think that through.
No. And I remember one of the teachers who kind of liked the idea that we were a couple. But we'd broken up the year before. We hadn't quite got back together. But people were like, you two just, you know, get over it, you know. You're like Cybill Shepherd and Bruce Willis on Moonlighting, you know.
Ross and Rachel.
Because we spent this whole time like saying, we're just friends now, like, you know, that whole thing. We're not doing, you know, we're just friends now. And so, but, you know, you knew, you remember her. There was a thing. Anyway, so one of the teachers said...
That teacher thought, let's see how just the friends thing holds up to IYP leadership camp.
Yeah, exactly.
And adjoining rooms, if you know what I mean.
Well, one night after the sing-along around the campfire, everyone went back, you know, everyone trailed back up to the dormitories and everything. And one of the teachers, one of the younger ones said, can you guys just go back down to the campsite and make sure that the fire's gone out?
Right.
And I remember thinking,
she meant that literally.
I remember thinking, I don't know your name, but I
owe you a Christmas card.
Yeah, because she remember that there was those teachers at school that taught the younger ones and you know who they were. So she was one of them. I remember thinking, I don't know your name, but thank you. So, yeah, needless to say, anyway, you want to go there.
Well, instead of putting the fire out, you rekindled the fire.
Well, she said to me after, a session of heavy petting.
How heavy?
Very heavy.
Quite heavy.
Let's just say we had to put that fire out again. You know, it relit.
Sparks were flying.
Embers. So, smoldering
rekindled.
Embers. Yeah, absolutely. So I remember she said...
Roll up a cardboard box of cornflakes.
Well, the same teacher who I hope wasn't like standing behind a tree and then made herself appear as a sort of thing. She sort of timed her entrance at a point where it was kind of like, okay, so if we don't stop here, one of us is going to get pregnant, you know.
Some freshmen are going to see some things they shouldn't see for a couple of years.
Well, no, they're all in bed. So this is the thing. They gave me like...
That's what you think.
Well, no, they were like, we were given...
They were spying on you the same way you were spying on Kim.
I got some teacher sanctioned alone time with this girl that, you know, she was the same girl that she was always like a few years ahead of me in thinking, you know, she was, you know, what, 16, but she was an adult, you know, she was very advanced, you know. I was just along for the ride. You may recall that, you know. So anyway, so this teacher came down and sort of, you know, broke up the party and we're like, yeah, we should probably go to bed. Anyway, she whispered to me just before we sort of parted in different directions. She goes, I'm going to sneak into your cabin and wake you up in the morning with a hug.
The teacher said that to you. That's amazing. That's hardcore. And did that happen?
Oh, yeah, it did.
With a hug?
It was an amazing feeling, actually, because I was only, you know, quite young, a very young teenager, but we were sort of one of the teachers, so it was this really weird, flip of reality. Suddenly we were given this, you know, we felt like adults, and we weren't being silly or, you know, pushing the boundaries too far or anything like that, but... you know, it was cool. It was a fun sort of memory. You know?
I believe the definition of not pushing the boundaries too far is waiting till the next morning to sneak in to give someone a hug.
Yeah, I think that's nice. You know, we didn't try anal. So
no butt stuff.
No, yeah, yeah. She, apparently, I found out later that she was right into it years later. Right into it. I think I got in there too early, mate. You know. Oh well.
I see. Yes. Is that your only? is that your favorite camp, school camp story?
No, in my senior year, I guess teachers just wanted to do things, especially the artistic based teachers. They wanted to do things that just weren't in a classroom. So suddenly, there were things like theater camps and music camps. Oh, do you remember all that sort of shit?
Well, no, I wasn't in those programs, I can imagine. Yeah. That's where the girls were loose and the beer was flowing. Oh,
absolutely.
None of those things.
But... Well, I mean, did they have a physics camp or?
Can you imagine?
I can, actually. Actually, you know, every lesson at school was a physics camp.
Yeah, I can imagine theater camp for some reason. I just, is it tweaking all my assumptions and judgments.
There was a guy called Billy, and he snuck a bottle of, as we mentioned earlier in the podcast, Bundaberg rum.
Right.
He snuck a bottle of that in, and he also had he rolled his own cigarettes. This is how bourgeois this guy was. Yeah.
He must have had a big bush.
No, he was one of those guys that had, like, the ability to grow a full beard in high school.
Curse that guy.
Yeah, you know the guy. You know the guy. He's Bill.
I still can't grow a full beard.
Yeah, I know. It was, you know, some of us aren't blessed.
And I'm still shy to smuggle a bottle of rum into somewhere I shouldn't take a bottle of rum.
Hey, you know what? Don't feel too bad about the whole beard thing, because Johnny Depp can't grow a full beard, and he's, you know, he's had plenty of opportunity to get one.
Yeah, well, fix it in post.
He's been around for years, that guy, you know. When I look
that
at
doesn't
him,
mean he can grow a beard.
Yeah, I hope that, like, in 20 years' time, I'm looking at Johnny Depp going, okay, you know, we're still young-ish. he's my canary in the cage, that guy, you know.
Yeah.
When he starts looking like, oh, he's going to drop off the perch, I better start making some arrangements, you know what I mean? I'm going to start looking into life insurance and things like that. You know what I mean? Because that's pretty much the day that Johnny Depp dies of natural causes. I better really start taking things seriously up to
Now, we, when we were in senior year at high school in grade 12, we went on what was called leadership camp. And they assigned 5 students per cabin to sleep in the cabin. I think it was like 2 or 3 nights, something like that. Anyhow, you and I weren't really friends at the time.
Well, I don't want to ruin it for you. Sorry, I don't want to ruin it for you, but it was 4 guys a cabin. It was 2 bunks. A cabin.
Apologize.
Yeah, because I know you're into maths and all that. I thought I'd just quickly do the numbers for you.
Yeah, how would you put 3 bunks into a room? Oh, sorry, 5 bunks into
a
room.
Yeah, I know. I'm losing it. No, it's kind of one of those crazy Japanese hotel where you, like, sleep in a pod, you know.
In shifts.
Yeah, so kids in a cabin.
Anyway,
yeah.
You got assigned to a cabin with a couple of my friends who were kind of theatrical and musically inclined, and... It was called Cabin 5. Do you get what I'm getting at?
Yeah, this must have been really annoying for you because...
really annoying to me.
Because all your friends, you know, because I was a bit of a, you know, fly-by-nighter kind of a guy, you know. I moved around at school. I didn't have, like, a set group. And in senior year, I suddenly found myself sitting with you and all your friends because of a musical and theatre connection with some of the guys in your group.
I think this was prior to that. But okay, you made a connection with those other guys. Yeah.
Well, yeah, so leadership camp, that by that stage in our senior year, that because remember it was like within the first few weeks of our senior year, it was very early on, yeah. So I'd actually made pretty good friends with a lot, you know, at that stage, musically with a lot of these guys. And so we just decided on this thing, you know, we were just going to, we were going to have fun. We were going to play music. We were going to sing because we had a band.
Let me preface it with this. This really got to me because leadership camp was for the kind of like the squares or the geeks, if you like, to a certain extent, because you didn't sign up to go into this very first camp at the start of senior year.
Well, I don't know. I think that's being a bit unfair. I think, it was...
Well, let's put it this way. Like, the cool kids who were smoking durries out the back of the school and banging chicks and going to parties didn't go to leadership camp.
But that's what the leadership camp was all about, because it was about making a group of kids that were just more about being good people, elevating them slightly, bringing them closer together. It was. I wouldn't say prefects or anything like that, but how many students in our senior year would there have been, like, what, 200, 300 or something like that?
Yeah.
And there was only 80 spots on the leadership camp, and you had to apply for it, as you're about to say, I think, in the previous year, in grade 11, because grade 12 was senior year. So in grade 11, just at the end of that, you had to express an interest in going on this camp that pretty much started, you know, as soon as senior year began. And it kind of, like, you know, it did sort of, in a way, and it sounds a bit sort of snooty to say this, that it did sort of sort the wheat from the chaff. That was the point of it in a lot of ways. It was the kids that could be bothered doing something like that.
Yeah. So that's why I was kind of miffed when you guys had this idea for the camp, because I was, you know, I was a vice school captain. I was a...
You were cool. You were here.
Exactly. And I thought there wouldn't be too much funky stuff going on. And then all of a sudden...
Well, we decided, because I think it was at least three of us, I don't want to name names, but we were the three of us out of the four guys were already in, like, their high school band together.
Right.
And the third guy was the fourth guy was, he was kind of like the Pete Best from the Beatles, or the Stu Sutcliffe.
He could keep time.
Yeah, he was just a mate. So, but he was also very theatrical as well. So we had this sort of, like, Python-esque feel about, you know, that might have been overstating things a little bit, but we sort of felt like we had this sort of Python-esque group thing going on, and it was four people to a cabin, so we happened to just be sort of sitting there, like, yeah, we're gonna do it. And then remember how you get assigned a cabin,
right?
And it turned out, like, maybe a week before, you were told what cabin it was, and there was a list that maybe went up, and it said, you know, and it said cabin five, and there was our names, and we're like, cabin five, oh yeah. So we were really big into screen printing t-shirts for occasions. And we made up these little t-shirts that said Cabin 5, you know. And and we even wrote a song, I think,
the reason I brought it up was to get to the song.
Mm.
You don't remember it?
I don't, man. I really wish I could. We might have to get the whole Cabin 5 guys back together. Do you know who would remember it? Is the guy that wasn't the musician. He'd probably be the guy that would remember it.
Well, I know. I can sing you a little bit of it.
Okay, all right.
We're the guys from Cabin 5, brotherly love, and we're the sexiest guys I love, brotherly love. We've got the shirts, we've got the chicks, brotherly love, because we're the guys with the biggest brotherly love. Hey,
oh,
that was it.
God, wow.
I did the whole song.
Oh my god, that was amazing.
And then there was four verses of you just singing brotherly love.
Wow, man, put some reverb on for you, man. That was amazing. That was so good. I heard that in, well, how long ago was that? 26 years? That was, wow, that's amazing.
Well, dear listener, it just goes to show you how miffed I was, because I thought, because, you know, what we're talking about with all this romance and a chance for a fingering or a flash of a nipple. At these school camps, and I never got anywhere close to any of that. And then I thought leadership camp was coming up. I was already the junior ducks. Yeah. I'd been selected to be vice school captain of the school. And here was this elite group going away to leadership camp where, like, the ruffians and the bullies would be excluded.
Time to shine.
My time to shine. And only to be absolutely outclassed by my friends and fucking Kerwin, who I didn't know very well at the time, turn up with screen printed shirts saying Cabin 5. I think they even had your name on the back. I can't remember.
Yeah,
maybe that was going too far.
No, on the front, this I do remember. I'm so glad you remember that song, by the way. They were plain white shirts. On the sort of the breast, we had a little five. But on the back, right, there was a big five, and then our names, like a football jersey kind of thing.
Right, yeah. Anyway, so you were singing this song ad hoc at different times. Throughout the...
It became a bit of a crowd favorite, as I recall.
Yeah, I know. That's why it was so galling. I found it my chance of seeing a nipple slipping away every time you sang it, right, being reduced by 20%. And then and it got so popular that then when it culminated after the three nights of the camp with having you always have a staff and student show. I think it was on-call performances. And
it was, yeah.
Let's just put it this way. I didn't see a nipple.
No nipple? Yeah. I didn't get much nipple there either, actually, because that, as you might recall, maybe you didn't know this, but that leadership camp, even though it was a great thing and there was lots of cool things happening, that was the scene of the once and for all breakup with the girl that I was just mentioning. That was my girl through.
Oh no!
That was the scene where she got with that guy Trent.
Oh, Terence Trent D'Arby, yeah, I
Terence
remember him.
D'Arby, yeah. Sang your name across my heart. Yes, yeah,
guitar.
He totally did. Yeah, I because
it must be quite galling because he did have cool long hair, but he was this tiny little shrimp.
Was he?
What's the name?
You don't think of it as Prince, yeah, are you? Hmm.
I remember him being really, really small and thin.
You're saying that
maybe that was just my opinion, being a big, big, big bloke.
You're saying that you run into Terrence at the shops or something like that. Don't, gee, I thought you were going to, you're a bit taller.
Anyway, sorry, name. Here's my heart.
Oh, he must get that a lot. I just realized, yeah. Can you sign your name across my heart, please?
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah, all right, yeah. I wish I never wrote that song.
No, put on your flat cap first. Gotta have that.
Yeah, so anyway, so I was dumped mercilessly by my...
did you see it coming?
Yeah, but you know what made it all better? It was because her super hot friend kind of took a bit of a shine to me at that point, and
did the old follow up.
Yeah, but I was too stupid to realize. I was so cut, you know, that she did it, but to decide to do it in front of everyone, you know, that was really was a bit much.
No Cabin 5 T-shirt or song could save you at that point.
Oh, but man, it was such. Do you remember how this
got
is the
that.
Other? Well, this is the other thing about leadership camp, as you might recall, Kelso. That there was a lot of efforts by the teachers running, and the whole point of it seemed to be about breaking you down emotionally and getting you, trying to bring you closer by putting you in groups and getting you to do things that was designed to make at least half of the little group start crying. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because, so I had an older sister, as you might remember. She went on this leadership camp, and I remember when she came back from it. Because back then, when one of your, because my sister was the oldest in the family, whenever she did something like that, she's going away on a camp, And so when she came back, the whole family sort of gathered around. Anyway, Mum sort of ushered her away from all of us straight into the bedroom. Into her bedroom, right. And we're like, "Oh, what's going on? What's up with her?" And
she's just checking if she's pregnant. Don't worry, guys.
So Mum's like, "Oh, she just needs, just leave her alone for a bit." And she was crying. She was really emotional. I said, "What's wrong? She's sad, because back then, if you're sad, something really, really bad's happened, right?" We just couldn't work it out. What's wrong? And anyway, just explained that, it was just really emotional, I'm like, oh, okay.
Right.
So I sort of had an idea that this is, kind of what might be coming. I was a bit sort of, cynical about some of the efforts.
Yeah, you've subverted the genre.
Yeah, yeah. So you remember when we'd get around in groups and they'd get you to talk about feelings and they'd start playing songs, really emotive songs. Do you remember that? Those little sessions. You just get people to sit around, they'd put on a James Taylor song or something real sad, and they'd get you to
What's
talk about...
What's your favorite James Taylor song? Song for a bit of music.
My favorite James Taylor song? Oh, man, I think you...
Fire and Rain, let's have it.
I don't really like requests as a professional, but I do have...
As a friend.
I do have some...
As a podcast co-host.
Well, but I do have some caveats to that, and the top of that list of caveats is James Taylor. So, the gentleman requested Fire and Rain.
On this leadership camp of 1991.
Well, you might remember that there was a few camp nights where the guys that could play guitars got our guitars, and
well, there was more than one.
Oh, there was heaps. Like the whole, because we had guitars. Do you remember also there was a thing called the Round of Thanks? Do you remember that?
No.
It was like at breakfast time, where you each person can get up and thank somebody for what they did, but you weren't allowed to clap or react. Do you remember that? They were the rules.
It was just this round of thanks. I don't remember at all, but it does clue me in now how I perhaps ruined the first time I ever took ecstasy with my brother and my friends, because apparently every 5 minutes I'd stand up and say a round of thanks all sorts of people.
Right.
kind of ruined it, apparently. Anyway,
well,
go ahead.
Well, that's where it comes from, I guess. Yeah, so round of thanks. And so there was this just to give you an idea of how many guitars were floating around.
Amazing. No wonder you got dumped.
Well, one of the things, I'm just sitting there at breakfast, just minding my own business, and a round of thanks comes on, you know what I mean? And, that, you know, I didn't think, no one thanks me. I'm the guy that everyone's probably thinking, yeah. Great, this guy's here, thanks!
Fuck him.
Yeah.
A round of thanks, I'd like to thank Trent for a magical night last night, and for opening my eyes to realise that Kerwin is a complete piece of dog shit.
You know,
we're dumped.
You know what? I think you might have preempted a little bit, because that did happen. So we're sitting at breakfast, you know, mind my own business, and round of thanks. Some, you know, usual shit happens, and then a guy gets up and says, "I'd like to thank Kerwin," and I'm like,
"No way!
What?" What? And he goes, "Yeah, he lent me his guitar." And I went, "I didn't lend..."
I did not.
I was saying, "I didn't lend that cunt my guitar. What the fuck? I should have had... We should have had a round of protest." Yeah. excuse
Objection.
Me. Yeah, Your Honor, I didn't give this clown my guitar. I mean, look at it.
guitar in the same way he borrowed my girlfriend, Your Honor.
Well, no one actually ever told me this, Kelso, but I had an idea that when I was about 11 or 12, that learning the guitar may lead to something like that a few years later at leadership camp in our senior year, where the guitars just seemed to be, like, ruling the whole thing. Didn't you remember that whole
ruling
thing?
Guitars.
The whole thing seemed to be one long jam, as I recall. Get my heart broken in between there, but it actually added to the jam, you know.
Anyway, getting back to James Taylor musical interlude.
Right, yes. About Jimmy T. All right. Okay. All right, here we go. Yesterday morning, you let me know you were gone. Suzanne, the plans you made put an end to you. I woke up this morning and I wrote down this song. I just can't remember who to send it to. But oh, I seen fire and I seen rain. I seen sunny days that I thought would never end. I seen lonely times when I could not find a friend. But I always thought that I'd see you again. Won't you look down upon me, Jesus? You gotta help me make a stand. Gotta see me through another day. My body's aching and the time is at hand. Ain't gonna make it any other way. Oh, I seen fire and I seen rain. I seen sunny days that I thought would never end. Seen lonely times and could not find a friend.
when I always thought that I'd see you again. Well, I've been walking my mind to an easy time, my back turned towards the sun. Lord knows when the cold wind blows, it'll turn your head around. Oh, there's hours of time on the telephone line, and talk about days to come. Sweet dreams and flying machines and bees on the ground. Oh, I've seen fire and I've seen rain. I've seen sunny days that I thought would never end. I've seen lonely times when I could not find a friend. But I always thought that I'd see you, baby, one more time again. I thought I'd see you one more time again. And there's just a few things going my way this time around now. Thought I'd see you, thought I'd see you firing. Ooh, did I, did I, did I, did I.
Very nice.
I mean, I was only going to play a bit, but I went the whole way.
Yeah, you went the whole hog, just like you did on that leadership camp.
Well, I do want to do Fire and No Rain, so, you know.
What I think is great about that song, which I absolutely love, is that that was his love song to two of his favorite American gladiators, Fire and Rain. They really beat him into submission.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was one of those songs, right? You figure out, you find out, like, one of the verses is about his heroin addiction, another one's about his friend's suicide. It's like, oh, I'm not singing that anymore. Can I?
Oh, goodness gracious. Wait, I never knew that until now.
I know, right? It's like,
woo!
Man, I thought he was just singing about, like, I don't know, putting out the campfire, I guess, or something like that. I don't know.
Wow, it's one of those songs, it's so like Honey. I've never ever listened to the lyrics.
Yeah, that's the thing about James Taylor. He could be singing about anything. I don't even care. You know?
Now, despite my predilection for sirens and hand claps, I think that style of kind of like, what do you call it, folk?
Yeah, sort of finger picky acoustic folk. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that might be my favorite type of song.
Like singer songwritery, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the thing about, yeah, you're right. Like that kind of dance music, there's lots of fun, cool sounds, electronics, all that kind of stuff. It has its place, certainly. But, you know, when you want to go deep and you want to go long, you know, that kind of music is where it's at. I think maybe
like on date night. On date night, yes. You want to go long, you want to go deep.
Yeah, we'll give her a kiss first, but you know,
a single kiss. I'm also, to change subjects slightly, but not really. I'm very keen on Karen Carpenter. Her voice, ooh, silky smooth.
Honey.
When I fell in love with Karen Carpenter and the Carpenters for the first time, when I watched their television movie of their career when I was like about 15 or something like that. She met her second husband or her first husband, one of them, met a husband after she'd been famous, and he pretended he didn't know who she was because she, as a celebrity, gets sick of people who are only interested in you because of your celebrity.
Right.
And he only indicated after they'd dated, like had a magical evening, ended up kissing, where he was pretending he didn't know who she was. And he said to her, "We've only just begun." Nice work. Now, that could have been dramatic effect for the movie, but it still holds up.
I'm not sure if I believe this guy, you know. Yeah. I'm not sure.
There's nothing hotter. So I'm sorry to break in. I'm sorry to make my point.
I know.
Nothing hotter than a lady with a very sexy, low folk singing voice like Karen Carpenter But there's also nothing sexier than a female drummer. Hello, add them together.
Do you remember like some of
the? Don't you remember the time you told me you love me?
Yeah, I do. Baby, 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 baby. Oh, baby. do I remember seeing...
All right, superstar.
There's a kind of a bit of famous footage. I guess it was a concert that was filmed where she's, you know, she's singing, but she spends a lot of the time on the kit. And she's like in full ball gown, you know. So not only is she playing the drums and singing and carrying the whole show, she's like dressed to the nines as well, probably in high heels, you know. No wonder exactly. She was hungry all the time.
You know how hard it is to tap a bass drum in the high heels?
Sorry, I think we had both awesome punchlines there, but they collided.
Just edit mine.
What was yours? What was yours? Let's have a punchline. What was yours again?
I said, do you know how hard it is to hit the bass drum with a high heel?
Mine was, no wonder she was so hungry.
She was doing a lot. She was burning a lot of calories.
I know, right?
Kerwin, it's time for Cover from Another Mother. Although, my dear friend,
yeah.
My longtime mate,
okay,
yeah. My much older boyfriend,
hey!
we've realised over the course of the recent episodes that it's no longer really a cover from Another Mother. So we're going to rename this part of the show as the Showstopper, because it is what we do at the end of the show to stop the show. So hopefully, dear listener, you'll come along with us on this ride. And what do you think about that, Cohen?
I think it's fantastic.
Do you like stopping the show?
Yeah, I've always wanted to be described as a showstopper, so this works in well. It certainly strokes my ego, yeah.
Much like that teacher who came down to the campfire, it's a showstopper.
Yeah. Go for it, Cohen! Yeah.
Now, we've been talking a lot about school camps and campfires. Mm-hmm. So, can you think of a song, which could be a showstopper, about camping that might be relevant?
Well, it's not necessarily about camping, but all this this great chat that we had about, you know, it transported me back to those days of school camps and, you know, singing songs. And do you remember we were talking specifically about that leadership camp where they were trying to get you to cry by playing songs and stuff like that?
I do.
Well, this is one of these songs that they put on. It was, I'm not sure exactly.
Tears of a Clown?
True Colors. How many times did we hear True Colors? Yeah, there was a lot. There was a lot of True Colors. I was going to play that, but no. There's one song that one of the teachers put on, and it really stayed with me, and years later I learnt it, and I heard it first on one of those little try to get your cry sessions. So here we go. You talk like Marlene Dietrich, and you dance like Gigi Germain, and your clothes are all made by Balmain. And there's diamonds and pearls in your hair. You live in a fancy apartment off the boulevard Saint-Michel, where you keep your Rolling Stones records and a friend who Sacha Distel. Yes, you do. And I've seen all your qualifications that you got from the Sorbonne, and the painting you stole from Picasso. Your loveliness goes on and on, yes it does. And where do you go to, my lovely, when you're alone in your bed? And tell me the thoughts that surround you. I want to get inside your head. And when you go on your summer vacation, you go to Joan-les-Pins with your carefully designed topless swimsuit, so you get an even suntan on your back and on your legs. And when the snow falls, you're found in St. Moritz
with the others of the jet set, and you sip your Napoleon brandy, but you never get your lips wet. No, you don't. Oh, where do you go to, my lovely, when you're alone in your bed? Tell me the thoughts that surround you. I want to get inside your head. So look in my face, Mary Claire, and remember just who you are. Then go and forget me forever, 'cause I know you still bear the scar deep inside, yes you do. Oh, where do you go to, my lovely, when you're alone in your bed? And tell me the thoughts that surround you. I want to get inside your head. Oh, I know where you go to, my lovely, when you're alone in your bed. And I know the thoughts that surround you. I want to get inside your head.
Very nice. So what is that song?
It's called "I Know Where," or "Where Do You Go to, My Lovely," by a one-hit wonder guy called something like Peter Sarsgaard, some Swedish name, Sarsgaard or something like that.
Oh, I see.
There's actually heaps of verses to it, so I sort of, it's a really quaint but beautiful little song.
Yeah, well, that's all very well, Cohen, but that does leave our dear listener with one question.
Indeed it does, Kelso. What's all that about? So we'll chat to you on the next episode, and don't forget you can tweet us with any of your discussion ideas at podcastkak, and you can also email us at podcastkak@gmail.com.
Thank you very much for listening. Indeed, it does mean a lot to us, to Kuan and myself. Do tell a friend, as that's how we hope to grow our show. And if you have time, give us a sweet 5-star review on your podcatcher of choice.
Yes, till next time.
Hooroo.
See you later.